All right, ladies and gentlemen, and strength coaches everywhere, welcome back to the Conjugate Chats. Before we start getting into the episode with our fantastic guests, we have a couple ad reads to get through. The first one is the Working Dog Coffee. So there's so many people I know mindlessly consume coffee through disturbing products on the market. The solution we have is offering an organic coffee product that doesn't have any of the nasty side effects as a poorly regulated energy drink. The only products you'll see on the label are 100%, yes, 100% organic coffee with organic flavoring. We have two flavors, the mild and the burner, are a great mix of a high caffeine product and a classic Colombian favorite blend for the coffee lovers. You can go to the website and use the code CHATS for 15% off, and every bag you buy will help support Working Dog charities around the country. Now, let's get into our other sponsor, which is Team Builder. Team Builder is the software for performance coaches around the world. Their powerhouse platform provides coaches with an elevated experience when it comes to program development, data tracking, and staying connected with athletes and clients. Team Builder is full of tools that coaches need, like multiple max training methods, 16-plus reports, evaluation testing, and goal setting, to name a few. Coaches also have access to consults with Team Builder's in-house sports scientists to help manage and analyze data. Head to teambuilder.com and sign up with the promo code CONJUGATE to receive a 30-day free trial as well as a 52-week football workout program. And with that in mind, let's jump into the episode.
And I gave a presentation about our in-season training program, and someone asked me a question, what do you do for monitoring? I was doing like these questionnaires on a daily basis and putting them out on Microsoft Excel with a color-coded spreadsheet. But my answer to the question, I don't think it gave the audience what they were looking for. I said, I talked to the athlete.
And welcome back to another episode of the Conjugate Chats. We have a very special guest coming on today. He's been in the professional hockey strength conditioning realm. He got his bachelor's degree from the University of Massachusetts in Boston. And he also has a master's degree from the University of Minnesota. He's been with the Anaheim Ducks, actually seen a Stanley Cup appearance and won the Stanley Cup with this team. And he's also been with the Minnesota Wild for a little bit as well. It is Sean Skahan. Coach, it's awesome to have you on, and I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, thanks a lot, JM. It's awesome to meet you, man, and I'm excited to be on today.
Awesome. So I kind of gave a little bit of your introduction already, kind of going into, you know, the professional hockey sector. So my first question for you, man, is like, how was it winning a Stanley Cup with the Anaheim Ducks?
Yeah, it was really special and really cool, obviously. You know what? There was, you know, in professional sports, you have this kind of pressure always on all the time in regards to winning hockey games. And this team that season had a target on its back from the get-go. I think the way that it was constructed, it was, you know, on paper from the get-go, the team to win the Stanley Cup, and to have that kind of inner pressure on you the whole season long, to see it finally come to fruition was pretty cool and a lot of fun.
That was in 2007, correct?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Awesome. Always been fascinated with hockey, just the sport in general, and we kind of chatted a little bit about that before we start recording. You know, grew up in the South, and I think literally when I was born, the Nashville Predators were coming up, and they were just established organization. So literally been watching hockey since birth, and you know, I've always been fascinated with the you know, the sport of hockey. How did you get into the professional side of things? Did you go to, you know, through the collegiate route? Did you do some private sector work before then? How did you enter that realm?
Great question. I did go through the collegiate route. When I hit my master's degree, I graduated from the University of Minnesota, and they have a pretty prominent college hockey program. And then my next job, you know, I graduated with a master's degree, needed to find a full-time job. My route was, in my belief, going to be collegiate strength and conditioning at the time. And at that time, I wanted to be a football strength coach, et cetera. But I worked with this prominent college hockey program with my master's degree. And then my first job was at the University of North Dakota as an assistant strength and conditioning coach, where they also have a really prominent college hockey program. So by that time, I've worked with the University of Minnesota, the University of North Dakota, and I also interned at Boston University, three of the best college hockey programs still to this day. And so my next job was at Boston College, where I was going to be the head hockey strength and conditioning coach. And I'm from Boston. I don't know if you can pick that up yet, but that was also Boston College Hockey is another really high-end college hockey program. And I was able to get that job. The whole time, like I wasn't really in my mind a hockey guy, but I guess on paper I was. And so I was at Boston College working with their men's hockey program as well as the women's hockey program for one season before I was actually asked by someone in the Anaheim, then the Mighty Ducks organization. I was asked by someone if I'd be interested in becoming their strength and conditioning coach. So the long answer is college hockey, college sports, and that's how I got there. Yeah.
So what do you notice, like, the big difference between, I guess, professional hockey and then collegiate hockey?
Well, a lot. And college hockey, you have a set schedule, the NHL you do as well, but your set schedule in college hockey is kind of like, you know, I relate it to like more of a football college schedule, except they play two games. One would be on a Friday night, one would be on a Saturday night. So from a training perspective, you have Sunday through Thursday of that week to get some good strength and conditioning work in. Where the NHL, you have 82 games spread out over the course of early October through early April. And those 82 games are really chaotic in terms of scheduling. You don't know. You could have four games a week. You could have two games a week. So from a program design perspective, that was challenging. And also, I think it's important to note that college players have both, I guess, levels of hockey have their own kind of outside stressors to the player. Where college, it's school, it's the dorm life, it is outside distractions that aren't as, I guess as important as professional life when you're talking about men with families, with mortgages, and also the fact that you can get traded during the season. A lot of outside stressors that are different. And also at the professional level, you have young players too who are kind of adjusting from that college hockey life or the junior hockey life to the professional hockey life. So yeah, there's some differences. And I also think the age in the professional hockey player, you could have, like, for example, my first year with the Ducks, I was younger than 75% of the roster. And I think I worked with a 44-year-old at one point in my career, where college hockey, you have, and nowadays you could have a player on your roster who's as old as, the oldest he could be is 25. So, I mean, those are differences.
Awesome. And I kind of think about it like, I don't remember where I heard this from. It was understanding that, you know, collegiate players, they're kind of understood of like they have to be there, and they you can motivate them a little bit more, I guess, in per se.
Yeah.
Where, you know, professional hockey players, like, they're there for a reason. And they have their own strength. Nowadays, they have their own strength and conditioning coach or their own trainer that they can go to, mm-hmm. you know, in today's time. But I remember hearing that somewhere. I've wondered if that was the same for, you know, professional hockey, where it was, you know, professional athletes know their talent's good, and, you know, they can get their strength conditioning from other sources if they've been, you know, with a trainer for X amount of years, and they, you know, it's working, and stuff like that. So awesome on that end there.
Well, let me, you know what? I should have brought that up, JM. That's a great question and point that you just mentioned. Yes, that is very common. It, nowadays at the NHL level, everyone has their own personal trainer in the off season or personal strength and conditioning coach. College hockey, yes, definitely. You know, you have your team workouts at a certain time. They're all expected to be there. They have the program that they have to do. That's definitely something I should have mentioned. Yes, I guess I hate to use the word control, because you still have to ask your athletes to do what you would like them to do at both levels. At the professional level, you have to be able to show the athlete that you can help them. And a lot of times, like, yeah, you could have a player who's been on a few teams, and, you know, they might have liked what a previous team has done, and they've all kind of, like, as they get older, they start implementing different ideas over the years, whether they learn something here or there that works for them. Yeah, you do have to find that balance. And but I would always have, like, during the season, which when you primarily get to work with the team that you're working with, in terms of, like, instead of the off season where you might have a few guys that are in town training with you during the season, I always had good teams where, like, they were great people that would do what I was asking them to do.
Do you think that's, like, just a cultural thing that you were at? Like, was that just the Anaheim Ducks buying into what you were doing as a strength conditioning professional? Or do you think the talent level was so high and they understood that their talent level was so high, so they bought into, I guess, that culture of like a winning culture?
Yeah, great question. I would say, yeah, I would. I think from a team perspective, they trusted me and my staff with providing them with the proper training program. Yes, I do believe in that. And I think, you know, I did it 19 seasons in NHL. And I think the culture can go sideways when you have one or two, maybe three or four that don't really necessarily want to do what we're asking them to do. But when you have that's a great point. Like, when you have a good culture, it starts with the captain of the team. And when they're buying into it, there's a good filter down to the end of the lineup.
I think that goes with any sport, right? It starts from the top to the bottom. You know, if the top are going to buy into what you're doing, then the rest kind of follow through. I've seen it at the high school realm, even when playing Division III football, kind mm-hmm. of seen it. You know, if our captains are bought into, you know, doing XYZ thing, you know, the rest are going to say, okay, we're going to buy into what we're, you know, here to do. So yeah, that's really awesome there, Coach. Kind of changing gears a little bit, you wrote a book called Total Hockey Training, and it's released by Human Kinetics. Talk to us about that process. Talk to us about, like, how did the Human Kinetics reach out to you, that writing process, like, everything, man.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. Yeah, so that was something I always had it in the back of my mind that I wanted to write a book. And earlier on in my career, the process was your players would leave Anaheim, for example, end of the season, I would give them a training manual to take home with them for the summer. And probably by the time I wrote the book, I mean, I was there 9 or 10 years at the time. And so that's a lot of training manuals that I would produce every summer and give to the players. And I always made tweaks every year. You know, here's our off-season program. Here you go. I still think some teams are still handing out training programs. Now it's, you know, you can have an app that you can just have a dashboard and run from your computer at the arena, because you do have some players who do take your training program and do them. It's very, very small number now. Now you have trainers who, like, you know, they're not going to disregard the program, but they're going to say, you know what, we'd like you to do this and we'll have you ready for training camp next year, if that makes sense. So I got to the process of, like, you know, doing all these manuals and kind of getting used to producing them. And I was like, why don't I write a book and explain the why better for youth athletes, for high school athletes, for college athletes, or even professional athletes who might not have a program in mind. So yes, I did talk to Human Kinetics and they were all on board. They wanted to do this, and I got to achieve the goal of writing a book. And it was, I did it during my last year in Anaheim, actually 14-15 season. And it was hard. I think there was probably 4 or 5 editorial steps along the way. It was chapters that had to be written, and they had to have it written a certain way for the book. And I remember that I had a photo shoot scheduled for the photos in the book. And our Ducks team had a really good playoff run that year. We went to the Western Conference Finals and lost to the Blackhawks in 7 games. So I had to have the photos taken somewhere else in Missouri. And they took probably, I don't know, 2,000 photos. And I had to go through them with a fine-tooth comb and make sure the best that I could, all these photos were what I wanted them to look like in the book. And so that was a process as well. And then seeing it published was really cool, to be honest with you. And I got to achieve a goal of mine to write a book. And it's, that's how that went.
So how long did it take you from, like, Human Kinetics reaching out to the writing process, the editorial process, to up to the release? How long did it take you to actually, you know, produce and publish your book?
Yeah, probably a year or so. I think I remember getting up early mornings and hammering out a chapter for an hour a day and not liking it and going back and changing it over and over again. And then maybe, like, something an idea that I had for an exercise, I changed that on the fly. And so that was published in 2015 now, and we're 9 years later, and a lot of it now, like, I'm like, I don't do that anymore. So, like, you know, it's kind of cool to see it out there. And I see it in hockey stores sometimes. And I get texts from friends at home who have young kids who are reading the book. So that's pretty cool.
Awesome there. You kind of previously mentioned about giving your players a manual for summer. What did that consist of? What does that look like for you? What does your programming for that aspect look like for you?
Yeah, the off-season program was always, it always depended on, you know, I actually like to have smaller manuals written, because that meant we went pretty deep in the playoffs. In those Anaheim days, we had some really deep playoff runs. So I remember, I think I gave them a 9-week program after we won the Stanley Cup. And I'm not sure if anyone even touched it. It might have been, you know, a coffee table book at someone's house, or maybe at the bottom of a birdcage. Who knows? But I think that was fun. Usually, you know, I've programmed a 15-week off-season program, and I've programmed a 9-week, like I said, in 2007. And it was 4 days a week of training, and it was movement prep, plyometrics, speed work, strength, conditioning, all kind of geared towards them coming back into training camp the next season. And so every section would have a description on our plyos, or description on our sprint work, a description on our strength training exercises. And I remember taking videos and pictures. And back then it was taking a picture and sliding onto the Word document. Like, yeah, it's that's what it was. And then you go, it was very cyclical year to year. You end up doing it and you have the same file. You can just update it, go from there.
Awesome. So let's touch on the conditioning part of it, because I'm always interested to see like different conditioning from football to, you know, volleyball, and then volleyball from softball. What did conditioning look like for the Anaheim Ducks in 2007?
Yeah, I primarily, you know, I like to have players extending their hips in the off season, because during the season, they're always in a shortened position. Everything can become locked up, tight, whatever you want to call it. So we wanted to elongate our hips as much as we can. So I did a lot of tempo running with the emphasis on a hip extension, a lot, maybe twice a week of tempo running. And we got into, started midsummer, we'd do our shuttle runs. We would do our typical 150-yard shuttles that would progress into 300-yard shuttles. I mean, back then, I was actually programming 200s and 400s. And you know, like when I was doing it live in person with my athletes, I'm like, these are killing them. So, yeah. And then it kind of, over the years, it adjusted to where we were actually slideboarding. We were slideboarding twice a week, too. We were doing slideboard intervals, Ultra Slide, good people, good friend of mine that runs that company. I would get slideboards from him, would slide across back and forth. I think it's a great conditioning tool for any athlete, not just hockey players. So we would slideboard and tempo run primarily, with the intention of like starting early with low reps and then by the end of the summer doing more reps. But that changed, JM, like during the, I don't know, God, this is 2002, over the last 20 years. Hockey players are getting on the ice way more earlier in the offseason than they were back then. So back then, they weren't getting on the ice in June or July. They might have got back on the ice in late August, which from a strength and conditioning perspective, it was great. But it changed throughout the course of the year as the players were getting on the ice earlier and earlier and earlier. Now there's players who, you know, maybe their season ends in April. Now they're getting back on the ice in June. And so I ended up taking out slideboard over the years because they were on the ice a lot more. We would still do tempo running because I do believe in the fact that you can get the benefits of getting your feet on the ground and extending your hips. And also, one thing I had to take into consideration was some guys couldn't handle the running. And so we would ride the assault bike or other bikes to replace those for those types of guys, if that makes sense. So yeah, if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. That was one thing I was always curious about, was almost mimicking that energy system that we see, you know, we see hockey players on the ice, but without being on the ice, if that makes sense, you know, having to do tempo runs and stuff like that. I was curious about what that conditioning looked like for hockey players.
Yeah, you know, I got to mention this too. It all depends too on your coach or your management that you work with. For example, in those Ducks days, I had a coach and GM who were very, I guess the word old school is appropriate. They loved the VO2 max test, and I had to make sure that we had the proper ability to run a proper VO2 max test at training camps. And it was tough because I didn't want our players training for that test. Because I didn't believe it. I always thought that, you know, if you had a higher VO2 max, you were less explosive, less powerful. And I wanted more explosive and powerful athletes. And so what would happen was I would try to design the conditioning program and just have them do the VO2 max test at training camp. But we'd have players who were trying to make the lineup that they knew that they better do a good job in that VO2 max test to impress the head coach and the management team. So that was always tricky. A lot of times it was like, hey, all right, you know, come in and do the test. If you don't do that well, just play good in preseason and everything will be fine. And we had some unbelievable players that were able to do that. But, you know, I never really designed the program to increase VO2 max, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And this kind of popped up in my head as you were talking. Was there a time to where, you know, there was a guy trying to make the lineup in, let's just say, the 07 Anaheim Ducks, right? Is there a guy that was trying to make the lineup that you had to make a decision of, like, do we want to keep this guy or this guy? And you had to look at, like, their strength numbers and their power numbers and their, maybe their, even their VO2 max, if that's what was into that consideration. Were you ever in those conversations?
Sometimes I was. It was always just, you know, management and coaches, they kind of know what they're looking at prior to the season. Like, you know, you can go into a GM's office or a coach's office and you can see the lineup on the board. You can see who they have slated to make the team. But if there's a player that needed, you know, that they identified as someone that could make the team, that maybe that needed that extra push, I was certainly involved with that from an individual perspective. You know, whether that's a player who they signed that wasn't, I guess, as fit as what they thought he was when he signed, like I would spend extra time with that individual, or a player that was traded that was, you know, that did happen. There was a player traded that was deemed out of shape that had to spend a lot of time with me before he got a shift. Then he became one of our best players. So yeah, there were definitely times like that.
Awesome. Kind of moving on, and I like talking about technology because it's just been the uprising, especially in strength and conditioning, I think the last 5-10 years. You know, we see GPS now, we have laser timers, we have jump mats, we have force decks, you know, there's a lot of technology. Mm-hmm. How did that play a role into your position as the years have gone on? Because you went through, how many years in the NHL?
19.
I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen technology develop, at, you know, throughout that 19 years. So how did that change, like, professional hockey for you as a professional and for the sport?
Yeah, I was asked about this in a recent one that I did, and I don't know. I hate to say it because, like, I don't want people thinking I'm some old dinosaur. But it was challenging. It was really challenging because something would pop up, and a lot of times I struggle with the delivery to the athlete, if that makes sense. So, for example, we invested in force plates my last few years with the Wild, I should say, and I had a tough time with implementing the technology through the course of the season, where, like I mentioned before, we played 82 games, okay? Every month, the team gets a complete day off away from the facility, okay? And I had to balance training and testing / monitoring, I guess. And you also had, I like to say the word noisy data. Hundreds of data points can come out of these devices. And to me, the human element needs to be taken into consideration when it comes to these devices, not only from delivering the information to the athlete saying why we're doing this and how we're doing this and what it's going to do for you, versus how that athlete might be feeling that day. And so I struggle with it. And also, technology piece, you know, we were doing, what do they call that? That the systems that provide you with your daily monitoring, your daily intake, your weigh-ins, all that stuff. Like, a lot of times I struggle with the fact that it didn't work. You know, like I'd go to log into my computer and boom, like something's down. And the athletes don't care. The athletes don't give a shit about it. And so I struggle with that because they didn't want, a lot of the times the guys didn't want to do it. And two, like, I didn't know if I wanted to do it sometimes because I knew that we had to play the next night. I knew that I thought it was more important to get a good warm up and maybe some plyos and then get that done. But from an overall perspective, it's here to stay. I mean, like some of the other testing devices, like, you know, there's other teams that were using other devices during the year and just beating up their groins during the year. And I'm like, it doesn't sound like something I want to be a part of. And I want my guys' groins feeling good for the game. So for example, like, you know, I just found a, I get it. You got to test your athletes at the beginning of the season, but testing during the season when that time could be allocated to training, I struggle with that. And I would probably still be struggling with it now because, but I think if I was in a situation where we had someone in that role and I was overseeing that role and saying, okay, we're gonna blend our training process with our monitoring process the best way possible, I think that would work. Long answer. So
no, you're good. You said something really important and something that I want to hit on. It was that the importance, especially in season with hockey guys and NHL, you know, you're in season, you're playing 80 plus games. Like, the importance of sport is outweighing, you know, testing, monitoring, doing. I know we're supposed to monitor and, you know, keep records of, like, you know, body weight and strength numbers and everything like that, but at the same time, like, the importance of sport is way more important at that time of the year. You know, in the off season, I could see, you know, a little bit more hands-on of, like, how much do you weigh, you know, what's your body fat percentage, are your hydration levels, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. But like in season, and I'm not saying that like none of that is important, like all that is important, right? You know, hockey players and any athlete shouldn't lose like 10-15 pounds in season.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm not saying that's not important. I'm just saying sport is becoming prevalent in season compared to the off season or even preseason.
Oh, 100%. And I remember giving a presentation one time, probably back in the 2010 year or something like that, or maybe like 09. And I gave a presentation about our in-season training program, and someone asked me a question, what do you do for monitoring? And I think at the time we had like, I was doing like these questionnaires on a daily basis and putting them out on Microsoft Excel, like a color-coded spreadsheet. But my answer to the question, I don't think it gave the audience what they were looking for. I said, I talked to the athlete. I asked the athlete, how you feeling? You know, did you get a good night's sleep? Did you have enough water today? Like, that is important too. And of course, like you mentioned, winning was the most important thing. I think it was Johnny Parker, the longtime football strength and conditioning coach, that said, we have 16 tests a season. That's game day. And so that, to me, the human element, I think, is often overlooked. And I think that's so more important than any device or practical application that's out there that can be resourceful. Like, I had players that didn't want to fill out their daily questionnaires on a game day. That, no, I'm not doing that because I don't want to know that I'm in the red on a game day. And we talked about earlier, professionals don't necessarily have to do everything. And so I was like, no problem. Okay. You know, like, and a lot of times in the professional ranks, like, especially in the hockey realm, the players are always afraid that the information will go up the higher top of the ladder. You know, and that was never the case for me. Whatever was in that weight room primarily stayed between me and them. And they knew that I was trying to help them the best I could.
Yeah, I did the same thing, especially in the high school realm. you know, when I first got to the school that I'm at now, that was the first thing I did was implement, you know, daily readiness questionnaires, you know, stuff that, did you sleep well, you know, how fatigued do you feel? Are you tired? And stuff like that. And I got about a month into it. I'm like, 10% of these kids are filling this thing out, man. Like, it's not worth the time for me. In my situation, you know, it's not worth for me. So it's a little comforting to know that, you know, some NHL players were like, I don't know, I don't want to be in the red for today. Yeah. I don't want to know that. And that kind of messes with your psyche too. And it can really mess with the athlete as, you know, they look at it, they see that color and they're like, oh crap, I'm not ready for today's game. Which in reality, you know, they could be.
Yeah, now we're seeing things like in the off season, there's companies that provide a questionnaire on a daily basis, and then your program is based off of that information. And I'm not a big fan of that. I'm not a big fan of that dictating your training. I think especially in the off season, your training should dictate your lifestyle away from the facility, I guess. You know, if you go out on a one night and you have too much to drink, that's on you as the player to be ready for that next, the session the next morning. Like, I don't like that. I don't believe in that. Then it just gives guys a, you know, oh, if I do this tonight, I'm going to have an easier workout tomorrow. Like, I don't believe in that either, if that makes sense. So yeah, that's my take on monitoring. I think when it becomes something that is bigger than the importance of winning hockey games or close to it, I think it's a waste of time.
When that shift becomes from the actual sport winning games to let's see how you're doing today. That's If I'm listening to you correctly, that's kind of that shift. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that's, and you have players that, athletes, I should say, that are going to do whatever they're asked to do. You have those types of guys that are just like, I got to do this or this. But it's still about winning games.
That's the end game, right? We, you know, a lot people don't care about like the whole process. They don't get to see that whole off season, that work. They only see the win and loss columns.
Yeah, 100%. I can tell you this story. A couple years in Minnesota, we were on a 5-game winning streak. And we were practicing in between games every day. And one of our players, and I always look at this, you know, I always evaluate our players. I knew who the hardworking guys were. I knew who the guys were who wouldn't say something to me if they didn't believe in what they were saying, if that makes sense. And one of our players came up to me, he's like, hey man, you know, we got to get a day off here. You know, we're winning games and we're practicing hard. I said, okay, I'll see what I can do. And then we were using technology. We were using First Beat technology. So I wasn't going into that coach's office unless I had the information with me. But because of this player and the respect that I had for him as a hardworking guy that wasn't going to say something if he didn't believe it, I was able to get the guy some days off. And wouldn't you know it, we won, I think, 5 more games. And then coach said to me, he's like, no matter what, we're practicing tomorrow. This is before a game. He's like, no matter what, we're practicing tomorrow. And we won that game, practiced the next day, and then we started losing. And I'm not saying it's because we practice all of a sudden, but there was that fine line of give and take between the athletes and the coach that, I don't know, sometimes it's hard to win. It's hard to win a game in the National Hockey League. And when something's working for that short period of time, like for me, keep going with what's working. And there's going to be a time when you do lose a game and then it's back to work, I guess. But, you know, again, it's tough to win at any level. And I remember that because, like, in the National Hockey League, for example, in Minnesota, there is a large media presence, and all of a sudden we didn't practice one day, and the coach is in the media availability, and he was asked, why didn't you practice today? And he's like, well, Sean said we needed a day off. And I remember like the morning, like, from when I read that, it was out there. I'm like, oh my God. And then luckily we won the next game, because if we didn't win that game, I was, you know, going to freak out or something, but it worked out.
I feel like in professional sports, not just hockey, but just professional sports, there's a lot of give and take, or you can give and take a lot more as a strength conditioning professional, because those players are kind of in tune with their bodies, or mm-hmm. at least they are more in tune with their bodies compared to, let's say, high school and college guys that are, you know, high schoolers are eating whatever and they're going to bed like 2 o'clock in the morning. And college people are out, you know, at the bars late at night, and they're also probably not sleeping, and they're cramming for exams. You know, I feel like more professional sports are more in tune with their bodies because they have the time to be in tune with their bodies and know, like, hey, you know, we're working hard. We need a day off.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And also the travel has to be taken into consideration. There were several times back in Anaheim where we would probably land at 3-4 in the morning from an East Coast trip, and then the guys wouldn't get to bed until probably 5 in the morning. And sometimes back in those days, we'd have to be at the rink for 11 o'clock practice. Yeah, that's very important, I think, especially today, like, that's what I've seen. Like, you mentioned that importance to their bodies. That's changed over the course of the last 19, 20 years as well, where it's now you have players who might be on the fourth line that's for listeners who might not know that, fourth line is like your checking line, the guys that don't get as many minutes played as the top guys. Those guys they're finally in tune with their bodies. You know, everyone is up and down the lineup, even the guys that aren't playing. So yeah, it's very, very important.
Awesome there, Coach. Kind of changing gears a little bit. I want to know your approach. Did you train goalies different than your frontman or your frontman? And did you train your defenseman different than your goalie? Was there any kind of like individualization in your programs?
Yeah, during the season, there was lots of individualization because I always looked at minutes played. You know, you have a 60-minute hockey game. You're going to have some guys, some defensemen that might play up to 30 minutes a game, which is half the game. And like I mentioned before, your fourth line guys, some of them might get 4 minutes, 5 minutes a game. Your goalies, yeah, your goalies played the whole game. And so I wouldn't say, like, we weren't doing goalie-specific drills, because every team in the NHL has their own goalie coach that does goalie-specific work on the ice. So my approach was always, we're going to, I guess, combat the overuse stuff that could happen with me. And so in terms of individualization, we would spend a little bit of extra time working with those goalies on things. For example, they might be spending more time doing hip external rotation exercises because they spend so much time doing internal rotation exercises. And they might, you know, that's about it. But our program was our program. But I adjusted their conditioning off the ice in terms of how many minutes they played. So the guys who played a lot of minutes, they weren't doing the extra conditioning on the bike during the season, where the guys who played less minutes might have been on the bike a little bit more during the season.
Awesome. And you're kind of like balancing out your athletes as well, because, you know, I think about the goalies with the internal rotation of their hips. And so you're doing external rotation exercises to kind of balance out some of those, I guess, deficiencies in their athletic abilities. Awesome job, Coach. I want to ask this question for young professionals out there, because there's a lot of younger, I guess high schooler or high school strength conditioning professionals that listen in on this thing. If someone wants to go into, I guess, the professional route, whether that be the NHL, the MLB, NFL, what route or what way would you recommend a young professional kind of make their way into the professional realms?
Good question. I think that's something that I hate to say it was easier back when I first started, but I know it's more competitive now, but I think it is still the old contact someone, an intern. You have to put in the time, volunteer if you have to get your foot in the door. I get it. It's very saturated now, but I think nowadays people aren't willing to do that. And you get in an intern, be around a good coach, be around a good strength and conditioning coach, get some experience, start putting your resume together and building, you know, whether that's interning for your local professional team, like reach out to them and say, hey, I'd like to get some experience doing this. And for example, back in Anaheim, I would have development camps and have people come and volunteer their time. I had a gentleman come from Germany, come to work with me for 1 week just to get that experience. I think that's important to get that experience and find a way to do it. If you have to have a job, part-time job, and maybe live with your parents, I don't know. But I think the people who really want to do this are going to figure out a way to make it work.
Absolutely. And you kind of mentioned the person from Germany coming in, an intern. So it's no secret that hockey is not an American sport. It's a Canadian sport that we adapted into our culture now. And I'm sure you had overseas guys or people, or I guess hockey players from different countries. Mm-hmm. And how was that? How was like interacting with like someone from, I guess, like Germany or from like other countries?
Yeah, well, it was, I wouldn't say challenging. It was a lot of fun. And I've worked with several from every country in the world now, it seems. I think for me, it's communication skills. And I've always been very empathetic with them, especially the Russian players who might not know a lick of English. They're learning the new language. And a lot of my kind of my Finns and Swedes, they kind of had a base of English speaking. So that was easier. But yeah, it's all about communication and getting to know those players. And also, you know, what I think is important, you have to know your kilo system. You have to know kilos versus pounds. And, you know, if you know that 60 kilos is 135 or 80 kilos is 185, like if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on that. But, you know, I think that's important is communication. And especially when they're new to the program.
So did you have to teach like some of these other players from other countries, like the pound system here in America, or did y'all as an organization change everything into like kilograms and kilos?
No, it was North Americans were pounds and Europeans were kilos pretty much.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, Coach, let's go ahead and start wrapping some things up. Always do this at the end of every episode. It's called Conjugate Coach Spotlight. So is there anyone out there in the strength conditioning realm that you want to highlight or shout out?
Yeah, I mean, I interned for Mike Boyle when I was younger, and he's helped me out quite a bit along the way and still does today as I run my own private business. A lot of coaches that gave me opportunities. You know, there's so many college hockey coaches like Jerry York, who hired me at Boston College, Mike Babcock, who hired me initially into the NHL, and Randy Carlisle and Bruce Boudreau, Dean Evason. Those are coaches that I worked with. GMs, Chuck Fletcher, Brian Burke, Brian Murray. Those guys, I want to give a shout out for believing in me to gear their strength and conditioning program.
Awesome, Coach. Well, again, thank you for taking the time to be on and taking, you know, a Saturday morning to sit down and, you know, talk hockey training, talk everything from the NHL and everything else, man. It was completely awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Jam. It was great to meet you in person, and I really appreciate this opportunity, and I love doing these things. So please let me know when this is out so we can share it, and appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. And that's another episode of the Conjugate Chats. Stay strong and have a day today.